Are you an artist, band, or record label? We want you to send us your music so we can put it on the radio. Not only this station, but stations across Canada. Check out earshot-distro.ca and share your music with more than 100 radio stations and programmers across the country. Earshot Distro is made by and for the campus community radio sector to help emerging musicians. Uploads cost $7 per song or $50 per album. Learn more at earshot-distro.ca.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Out of national responsibility, out of the will to prevent the rift in the nation, I have decided to suspend the second and third readings of the law in this term of the Knesset, in order to allow the time to reach that wide consensus ahead of the legislation during the next Knesset.
Following months of mass protests, a general strike on Monday, and the Prime Minister firing the Defense Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to delay plans to overhaul and weaken Israel's judiciary. As a concession to the far right, he's agreed to establish a new National Guard under the control of Israel's National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was once convicted of racist incitement against Arabs and supporting a terrorist group. We'll look at what this means for Palestinians.
It's important to keep in mind that the protests that are taking place in Israel today are not protests to save what is being called democracy, but rather they're protests to hang on to a particular political order, one that privileges Israeli Jews over Palestinians across the entirety of the territory.
Then to Nashville, Tennessee, where a heavily armed former student attacked a private Christian school, killing six people, half of them 9-year-old students.
And now I am overwhelmed at the thought of the loss of these families, of the future lost by these children and their families. And the leading cause of kids get death now is guns and gunfire. And that is unacceptable.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In northern Mexico, more than 36 asylum seekers at an immigration detention center in the border city of Ciudad Juarez have died in a fire that broke out overnight at the facility near the Santa Fe International Bridge in El Paso, Texas. At least 39 people are dead, 29 others injured, most of them Venezuelan. Multiple news outlets, including La Jornada, report the fire broke out after officials with Mexico's National Migration Institute began cracking down on migrants earlier in the day. This comes just 2 weeks after hundreds of asylum seekers, mostly from Venezuela, were blocked by barbed wire and riot police as they tried to cross from Juarez into El Paso, Texas, to apply for relief. The deaths in Mexico come just hours after the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees urged the Biden administration not to adopt a proposed anti-asylum rule that would deny claims made by refugees who lack, quote, documents sufficient for lawful admission, unquote. In a statement, the UN Refugee Agency said the regulation would restrict the fundamental human rights to seek asylum, adding, quote, UNHCR is particularly concerned that this would lead to cases of refoulement, the forced return of people to situations where their lives and safety would be at risk, which is prohibited under international law, unquote. Nashville, Tennessee is mourning after six people were killed in a shooting Monday at a private Christian elementary school. All three students shot and killed were 9 years old. They were identified as Evelyn Dickhouse, Hallie Scruggs, and William Kinney. The adults killed in the shooting were identified as Catherine Kuntz, the head of the school, Cynthia Peek, a substitute teacher, and the custodian, Mike Hill. He'd worked at the school for 13 years. Police say the shooter was armed with two assault-style weapons and a handgun and shot their way through a side door to enter the school before being killed by police. Officials say the shooter was a former student at the school and had written a manifesto laying out plans for the attack that included maps of the building. A Fox News report in Nashville about the shooting was interrupted live by Ashby Beasley, a gun control advocate and survivor of the July 4, 2022 mass shooting in Highland Park, Illinois.
Aren't you guys tired of covering this? Aren't you guys tired of being here and having to cover all of these mass shootings? I'm from Highland Park, Illinois. My son and I survived a mass shooting over the summer. I am in Tennessee on a family vacation with my son, visiting my sister-in-law. I have been lobbying in D.C. since we survived a mass shooting in July. I have met with over 130 lawmakers. How is this still happening? How are our children still dying, and why are we failing them? Gun violence is the number one killer of children and teens. It has overtaken cars.
At the White House, President Biden once again called on Congress to pass an assault weapons ban. Later in the broadcast, we'll go to Nashville, Tennessee, for the latest. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to delay a push to overhaul and weaken Israel's judiciary until after the Knesset's Passover recess. Netanyahu made the announcement Monday after much of Israel was shut down by a general strike and following months of mass protests. As a concession to the far right, Netanyahu agreed to establish a new National Guard under the control of Itamar Ben-Gvir, Israel's ultra-nationalist national security minister who is convicted of racist incitement against Palestinians and supporting a terrorist group. While the general strike was called off after Netanyahu's announcement, protests continue. On Monday night, Israeli police fired water cannons and stun grenades to disperse protesters in Tel Aviv. We'll have more on Israel and Palestine after headlines. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has said he stands ready to use nuclear weapons anytime and anywhere. North Korean state television reported the comments as it broadcast pictures of Kim inspecting nuclear warheads as part of what the North calls a program to produce more nuclear material. On Monday, North Korea test-fired two tactical ballistic missiles into waters off the coast of Japan, the North Korea's seventh missile test this month. The launches came after the U.S. Navy and South Korea completed their biggest springtime war games in years, and as the nuclear-armed USS Nimitz aircraft carrier battle group arrived at the Busan Naval Base in South Korea. Meanwhile, the Financial Times reports North Korea is preparing to resume foreign diplomatic activity as Kim Jong-un gradually reopens North Korea after 3 years of isolation during the coronavirus pandemic. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has arrested a prominent education advocate who publicly criticized the Taliban's restrictions on girls going to school. Matula Wesa is the founder of PenPath, a group that traveled across Afghanistan campaigning to bring education to rural areas. In his last post on social media, Wesa shared a video showing PenPath women volunteers protesting for the right to education. He wrote, quote, "Men, women, elderly, young, everyone from every corner of the country are asking for the Islamic rights to education for their daughters." In France, hundreds of thousands of people have joined strikes and protests nationwide today in the latest demonstrations calling on President Emmanuel Macron to cancel a measure raising the age of retirement from 62 to 64. Unions have shut down airports, train stations, schools, garbage collection, oil refineries, and more. The strikes came as the head of France's largest labor union, Laurent Berger, called on Macron to put the deeply unpopular pension reform on hold.
l'intersyndicale.
If the trade unions were received by the President of the Republic, something which we have been asking for almost a month now, and we were told, you cannot talk about pensions, that would make no sense at all. It would be almost anachronistic. There are millions of people who are opposed to this pension reform and who are demonstrating, if we want to avoid clashes, and I want to avoid them, what the unions are proposing now is a gesture of appeasement to find a way out. It must be seized.
In Florida, a dual Haitian-Chilean citizen has pleaded guilty to three charges related to the July 2021 assassination of former Haitian President Jovenel Moïse. Rodolphe Jarre signed a plea agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern Florida Friday, admitting he provided funds to purchase weapons while allowing at least five other suspects to stage their operation at a property he owned in Haiti. California residents are bracing for yet another atmospheric river, with forecasters predicting high winds and heavy rain and snow this week. This follows 11 similar storms over the winter that shattered daily rainfall records and flooded tens of thousands of acres of farmland in California's central San Joaquin Valley. Advocates for California farm workers have described the floods as catastrophic, leaving them with fewer job opportunities and fewer spaces to live. Eloy Ortiz of the Center for Farm Worker Families told a local ABC affiliate, quote, all the donations from the public will not be able to resolve this situation. We need federal assistance, he said. Officials in Philadelphia are continuing to monitor water quality after as much as 12,000 gallons of acrylic latex polymer leaked from a chemical processing plant into a tributary of the Delaware River. Based on current testing, authorities say tap water will be safe to drink until at least 3:30 p.m. today. Environmental advocates have criticized how local officials have responded to the chemical spill. This is Maya Van Rossum, leader of the Delaware Riverkeeper Network.
We think it is absolutely important that there is critical focus on ensuring that drinking water supplies are safe. But at the same time, we also want to make sure that our state and federal agencies are ensuring that the critical ecosystems of the Delaware River are also being monitored.
Minnesota's largest electric utility has temporarily shut down the Monticello nuclear power plant after reporting radioactive tritium was released into the surrounding groundwater near the Mississippi River. It's the second such spill reported by Xcel Energy since November. Minnesota's Pollution Control Agency reports the plant shutdown caused a massive die-off of fish due to a change in water temperature in the Mississippi. Police in Atlanta, Georgia, raided the Wilani Forest Monday in an attempt to clear protesters who've camped in the area for months as part of a campaign to block the construction of a massive police training facility known as Cop City. It would be the largest in the country. According to the Atlanta Justice Alliance, one of the first things destroyed during the raid was a memorial to Tortuguita, a forest defender who was shot dead by police in January. There are reports authorities may be planning to begin clear-cutting parts of the forest in coming days. Arizona's Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs signaled Monday she will delay the planned April 6 execution of death row prisoner Aaron Gunches, who's set to receive a lethal injection after pleading guilty to murder in 2002. Hobbs has vowed she would not sign off on any executions unless she's confident Arizona isn't violating constitutional rights when enforcing the death penalty. Meanwhile, Idaho's Republican Governor Brad Little signed a bill Friday allowing execution by firing squad. Mississippi, Utah, Oklahoma, and South Carolina have passed similar laws. And New York City's chapter of the Audubon Society has voted to change its name, joining several other local chapters of the bird conservation group, dissociating themselves from the so-called founding father of American birding. Earlier this month, the National Audubon Society voted to retain the name of John James Audubon, the 19th-century French-American naturalist who enslaved at least nine people and espoused racist views. That set off a revolt among leaders of local chapters of the society. In a statement, NYC Audubon's board of directors wrote, quote, "We recognize that Audubon's views and actions towards people of color and indigenous people were harmful and offensive, and that the harm continues today, presenting a barrier to people who might otherwise become involved in or support our work," unquote. NYC Audubon says it has begun the process of finding a new, more inclusive name. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we're starting with international news. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to delay a push to overhaul and weaken Israel's judiciary until the next parliamentary session following unprecedented mass protests. Netanyahu made the announcement on Monday after much of Israel was shut down by a general strike.
We insist on the need to bring forth the necessary amendments to the judicial system and will allow the opportunity to achieve them through a wide consensus. It is an utmost worthy cause. Therefore, out of national responsibility, out of the will to prevent the rift in the nation, I have decided to suspend the second and third readings of the law in this term of the Knesset in order to allow the time to reach that wide consensus ahead of the legislation during the next Knesset. This way or the other, we will bring a reform that will reinstate the law's balance between the authorities while preserving, and I will add strengthening, civil rights.
Netanyahu spoke Monday, one day after he fired Israel's defense minister, who'd warned that the judicial overhaul represents a, quote, clear, immediate, and tangible threat to the security of the state, unquote. While the general strike was called off after Netanyahu's announcement, protests have continued. On Monday night, Israeli police fired water cannons and stun grenades to disperse protesters in Tel Aviv. In a concession to the far right, Netanyahu agreed to establish a new National Guard under the control of Itamar Ben-Gvir, Israel's ultra-nationalist national security minister, who was once convicted of racist incitement against Palestinians and supporting a terrorist group. We're joined now by two guests. Natasha Roth-Rowland is editor and writer at Plus 972 magazine. She just completed her history doctoral dissertation, which focuses on the Jewish far right in Israel, Palestine, and the United States. She's joining us now in New York City. And from Alexandria, Virginia, we're joined by Yusuf Munayir. He's a Palestinian-American analyst, senior non-resident fellow at Arab Center, Washington, D.C. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Let's begin by talking about exactly what's happening now in the streets. Yusuf Munayir, these are mass protests unprecedented in the history of the state of Israel. They are protesting the overhaul and weakening of Israel's judiciary. They are not talking about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. As Palestinians continue to be killed on the West Bank, if you can talk from your perspective overall what's happening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Amy. You're absolutely right. The protesters in the streets are focused on what they see as a threat to them, and not really a threat to Palestinians by these legislative reforms, which aim to further weaken the court system in Israel. It's important to point out that this is a process that did not start with this government and that the court system in Israel has been weakened for some time. But with this government, a religious nationalist government, there are many Israelis who see the government's agenda as a major power grab that's attempting to reshape Israeli society in a way that will disadvantage them, them being primarily non-religious nationalist Israelis and secular Israelis. And so they are perceiving for the first time a threat not to the court system, but a threat to the court system that will actually weaken their rights. The rights, of course, of Palestinians have not been upheld, whether Palestinian citizens of Israel or Palestinians living under occupation in the West Bank and Gaza and Jerusalem, they have not been upheld by these courts for a very long time. It was not until, though, that these communities in Israel who are protesting today recognized the direct threat to their own rights that they decided to mobilize en masse in this way. And I think this really underscores just how deep the consensus is within Israel about the apartheid system and discrimination against Palestinians. Clearly, Israeli society has always had the capacity, we're seeing it on display now, to challenge their government's policies when they understand them to be unfair. But it seems that Israeli society does not think its treatment of Palestinians, which of course the human rights community and many others, including Israeli human rights organizations, concluded amounts to apartheid. They don't seem to see a problem with that. What we're seeing in the streets today is unprecedented as far as Israeli society goes, but the mistreatment and discrimination against Palestinians is not unprecedented at all and is baked into the foundation of the political system in Israel.
And Yusuf, speaking about the foundation of the political system, you've made the point that Israel does not have a written constitution. Why and what is the significance of that in the present moment?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the core points here, because you have two different branches of government, the parliament and the government that was put together through the parliamentary elections, and the courts, which are essentially locked in a battle over power. And the parliament and the government is demanding that it has the authority to essentially claim greater powers over the courts, be able to override court decisions with a simple majority. These kinds of matters are usually outlined in a foundational document, in a supreme law like a constitution that limits the powers of different branches of government and makes clear rules about where power lies and in what situations. Israel doesn't have a constitution, and it doesn't have a constitution for very important reasons. In fact, when Israel was created and declared in 1948 in their Declaration of Independence, they promised that they would adopt a constitution within a few months after declaring independence, in line with the expectations of the international community and the United Nations when they put forward the 1947 partition plan. And in fact, the Declaration of Independence copied language from that partition plan about the need to guarantee rights of equality for people regardless of religion and ethnic origin and so on and so forth. At the time, Israel was interested in gaining international legitimacy. But what they found was, if they were going to adopt a constitution, they'd have to limit state power in ways that would make it much harder for them to carry out their settler colonial project in Palestine. If they had to accept equality before the law, they couldn't take land away from Palestinians and privileged Jews coming in from outside of the country to take their place. And so they didn't end up adopting a constitution and allowed the state to have maximum flexibility to carry out this settler colonial project. And in fact, that project, which continues to this day, is one of the main reasons why Israeli politics has gone so far right, that you see the kind of extremists in government today that in years prior were on the fringes of society.
I wanted to go to Natasha Roth-Rowland to ask about the history of Itamar Ben-Gvir, someone you have studied for a while. Again, Netanyahu has agreed to establish a new national guard under his control. Itamar Ben-Gvir, Israel's national security minister. He's an ultra-nationalist politician who openly supports the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. In 2007, he was convicted of racist incitement against Palestinians and supporting a terrorist group. His radicalism dates back decades. I want to go to a few clips. In an October 1995 interview, Ben-Gvir can be seen holding an ornament taken from the slain Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin's car by far-right Israeli activists during a protest against him when he was alive and the Oslo Accords.
People managed to get to this symbol from Rabin's car. The symbol is a symbol, and it symbolizes that just as we got this symbol, we can get to Rabin.
Just weeks after that interview, a Jewish extremist assassinated Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin in Tel Aviv. For years, Ben-Gvir hung a picture in his home of Baruch Goldstein, the Israeli-American who killed 29 Palestinians at a mosque in Hebron in 1994. In 2011, Ben-Gvir told a reporter why he chose to put Goldstein's photograph on the wall of his home.
He's a righteous man. He's a hero. This is a doctor who saved Jews throughout his life.
In October, Itamar Ben-Gvir waved a gun and shouted during a confrontation in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of Jerusalem, where settlers have attempted to violently evict Palestinian residents from their homes.
If they, Palestinians, throw stones, shoot them.
This is Mahmoud Saou, a Palestinian who lives in Sheikh Jarrah, describing Itamar Ben-Gvir's actions in his neighborhood.
This field office is within the plan to take over Jerusalem, Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, and the house is there. He sets up his tent here and starts pointing at houses that he wants to take. My house is under threat. My neighbor's house is also under threat. We all receive eviction orders or courts to increase in rent, also orders not to build or renovate. He used to come here and make trouble for everyone. Imagine a Knesset member pulling out his gun towards the people in the neighborhood. We have children and women here. So what do you expect from him if they assigned him as the Minister of Public Security or any ministerial position? Of course he will be more confident and relieved. But as my neighbor said, we don't care, even if he was a prime minister. We are staying in our houses here. This is our legitimate right to defend our houses and children.
And it was after this that the now, once again, Prime Minister Netanyahu named Itamar Ben-Gvir the Secretary of National Security. Natasha Roth-Roland, talk more about his significance and being put in charge of what they're now shaping to be a National Guard. Some are calling it Ben-Gvir's private militia.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show, Amy. As we saw from all these clips, Itamar Ben-Gvir is somebody who sees violence as a legitimate means to a political end, whether he is engaging in that violence himself or inciting it directly or indirectly. He has a long track record of aggression, provocation, showing up to the site of political tensions and encouraging further tensions, encouraging further violence. He has pulled a gun on Palestinians himself at least twice. That's what we have documentary evidence of. We don't know if he's done it more than that. He has encouraged police to shoot protesters. That was before he became National Security Minister. As you say, he was appointed by Benjamin Netanyahu. Now that he is National Security Minister, he's in charge of all of Israel's police. That's the regular police and the border police, which patrols inside the occupied West Bank. So he already has an immense amount of power over police forces that regularly inflict violence on Palestinians. Now there is talk of him having this National Guard, which he's been lobbying for some time. He's not the first person to come up with this idea. It was bandied around by the previous government as well, under Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. But now, as this kind of exchange for not quitting the government in response to Netanyahu deciding to temporarily put on pause these judicial overhaul plans, Netanyahu has given Ben-Gvir even more potential power. Netanyahu is responsible for a lot of the power that Ben-Gvir has right now. He has helped shepherd him in from the political margins into the mainstream, giving him this unprecedented level of influence. What happened yesterday is another step in that direction. It's not clear at the moment when exactly this National Guard will be established and what form it will take, but the terminology of calling it basically Ben-Gvir's private militia, I think, is quite accurate. And if we put that in the context of some of the civil violence that we've seen enacted by settlers against Palestinians, both in the occupied territories and inside the Green Line, we get a kind of frightening preview of what this National Guard might look like. As we saw in May 2021, during this period of immense violence and unrest on both sides of the Green Line, and as we saw in the Huwara pogrom at the end of last month, when around 400 far-right religious settlers